It's 7:42 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Bob Powell. This morning, a conversation between pro-life and pro-choice.
I believe that being pro-life means loving people and treating them with respect. So I treat the legislators who don't agree with me on the issue the same. I believe that's what we're supposed to do.
That's coming up this West Virginia morning. I'm Bob Powell. Advocates for the decriminalization of cannabis gathered Tuesday before a Morgantown City Council meeting. As Dave Mistich reports, those advocates are hoping to build a statewide movement that pushes decriminalization and legalization efforts from city councils all the way to the State House.
West Virginia, like it or not, we are going green.
About 50 people gathered in downtown Morgantown for a rally supporting the decriminalization of cannabis. Delegate Danielle Walker, who represents Morgantown in the West Virginia House of Delegates 51st District, was among those leading the event. Walker says there are many arguments for decriminalization, including giving people more access to medicine and correcting systemic issues within the criminal justice system.
All the people that are in prisons and jails because of using a plant, of possessing a plant, they get more time than some of these other offenses. And then it becomes a race issue.
As Walker points out, cannabis arrests show a stark racial bias in the American criminal justice system. According to an analysis by the ACLU, African Americans are nearly four times more likely than whites to be arrested on cannabis-related charges. While West Virginia passed a medical cannabis program during the 2017 legislative session, some advocates say getting that program off the ground has been slow going. Applications open next month for those wanting to enter the industry as growers, processors, and distributors. As a cancer survivor who has used cannabis for medical purposes, Rusty Williams is the patient advocate for the program and is also running for the House of Delegates in the 35th District. Williams says current law fails to address big issues related to cannabis policy.
One of the key elements that was missing from the medical cannabis argument and debate was the fact that we still have a mandatory minimum for cultivation in West Virginia. Regardless of if you've got a seedling or if you've got a whole plant in your backyard, if you get caught, you're going to jail.
Williams drove to Morgantown from Charleston for the rally in the city council meeting. He says decriminalization in Morgantown is a good first step in pushing for similar policy in other municipalities, as well as building up to legalization efforts on the state level.
I think that once they see, you know, a city has done this in West Virginia and sky didn't fall, maybe that, to me, that's the best way to get the message across. Because if we try to just talk to folks, like I said, they get it. Most folks get it. Most people see this for what it is. This is not a partisan issue, no matter how much they want to turn it into one. Cancer never asked me if I was Republican or Democrat. It just showed up and tried to take me out.
Eli Bomwell of the ACLU of West Virginia presented a draft ordinance to the city council that would allow Morgantown to move forward with decriminalization. The proposal would reduce penalties for possession of up to 15 grams of cannabis to a fine of $15 and no jail time. The measure is now under review by the city council, but has not yet been formally introduced. The Working Families Party, which organized the Tuesday rally, says they have collected more than 600 signatures in support of decriminalization in Morgantown. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Bob Powell. It's 7:47. The National Weather Service has issued a winter advisory for much of the state through tomorrow morning, and a high wind warning expected tonight into tomorrow morning for the Potomac Highlands. For the rest of today, it'll be cloudy and windy with a chance of rain continuing throughout the morning, becoming mostly sunny this afternoon, but wind gusts should begin to gust up to 55 miles per hour through this evening. Daytime high temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Jaeger Airport CRW, West Virginia's gateway to the world. More at JaegerAirport.com. Support for WVPB is provided by the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra presenting the Nutcracker with the Charleston Ballet, December 13th and 14th at the Clay Center in Charleston, WVSymphony.org. Abortion can be a hot-button topic to avoid around the Thanksgiving table, but it's a key issue at the heart of the highly polarized political climate. Several states now have abortion restrictions in place. Some states have signed abortion bans. Those aren't in effect yet. And next year, the U.S. Supreme Court is scheduled to hear a case that could change the right to legal abortion. On the latest episode of WVPB's program, Us and Them, host Trey Kaye speaks with people in West Virginia about this emotionally charged subject. He wonders if it's possible for people to speak civilly about their differences.
I'm Margaret Chapman Pomponio, CEO of West Virginia Free, Advocates for Reproductive Health, Rights, and Justice.
I'm Karen Cross, Political Director for National Right to Life.
Karen's been in Washington, D.C. for 14 years now. But she started out as a lobbyist for West Virginians for Life. That's when she and Margaret found themselves at the state capitol on opposite sides of the abortion issue.
I got involved in this issue after having had two abortions.
Karen says she had an abortion before her senior year in high school. And later, after she was mother to a young daughter, she had her second abortion when she was 23.
My life changed again after that abortion. I began to drink more heavily to try to numb the feelings. And after about 3 years, I started having nightmares, and I decided to start. I just felt like we needed something in Morgantown. This is in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I felt like we needed something for girls and women who were pregnant unexpectedly, unplanned or whatever, in crisis, and that we could offer them help. Whatever their need was, I just wanted to have the community fill that need. And so we started a pregnancy center in 1984 in Morgantown. And in fact, at that very first meeting, they showed a video of abortion, and I remember crying, and everyone else was crying too, but I was crying because I knew I had done that. And I remember thinking I would die if anybody knew what I had done. And at the end of that meeting, I volunteered to help with girls and women, and to help set it up and to be the treasurer on the board. And I said, I'll do anything at all to help women and their babies. Just don't ask me to get involved in politics. That kind of changed over time.
Margaret, the CEO of West Virginia Free, says she also became aware of abortion in high school. That's when one of her friends got an abortion. In college, she supported another friend who wanted to end her unintended pregnancy.
Also, at the time, my political consciousness was really peaking. You know, I was learning about the civil rights movement for the first time, and all of these issues around fairness and justice were kind of crashing down on my shoulders. And so I became an activist for social justice. And organized Gunnison, Colorado's first pro-choice march and rally with some other students, and went on to study public policy and political science for my graduate work in Bellingham, Washington. I ended up coming back to West Virginia. This organization named West Virginia Free needed a lobbyist. I absolutely had no intentions of being a lobbyist. I didn't know anything about, you know, I remember being at the Capitol and just thinking that I had been thrown into the lion's den. You know, they needed a lobbyist. I was supportive of the issue. And then I just learned the process as I went, which you probably did too, Karen.
I did. Absolutely. Yeah. I knew nothing about lobbying. And in fact, when I started, you know, it was after about a year after I helped organize the pregnancy center that I took the job at West Virginians for Life. And they had to tell me what a PAC was. I didn't know what a PAC was.
You have both said that, you know, it was trial by fire. You didn't expect to be lobbyists. Margaret, you said you felt like you were thrown into the lion's den. And so I guess I'm wanting to know, when you two engaged each other at the Capitol during legislative sessions, I mean, was it contentious? Did you connect with each other in a way where you got strident and angry with one another?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Karen.
Well, first of all, I like Margaret. But I believe that being pro-life means loving people and treating them with respect. That's a part of being pro-life. And so I treat the legislators who don't agree with me on the issue the same. I treat people with respect. I try to, at least. It's not always easy. But I believe that that's what we're supposed to do. So,
what about you, Margaret?
Yeah, I'm finding this really interesting because this is the first time that Karen and I have been asked these kinds of questions,
yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot more commonality, which I understand maybe is the point of the show. but that is what I always say when people ask me, like, what really drives me in this work. And it's a sense of compassion and love and equity. And so, and I like people and I like Karen. I mean, we have had strong disagreements, but we always met them with, I think, mutual respect for each other.
So this is atypical.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, politics, I do think that if you care about an issue and you see that someone, even on the opposite side, if they care about an issue and they're respectful, I mean, you earn a certain amount of respect for that person. I mean, I see that under the Capitol Dome quite a bit, really. But I certainly don't have that kind of cordial relationship with other more... I mean, Karen, I would consider you hard line on this issue for
pretty
sure.
Pretty hard line, yeah.
Yeah. But there are other hard line lobbyists on this who don't even want to smile or speak to me. You know, like if I see Karen and I know she's with someone, I mean, Karen loves to take pictures. And if, like, you don't have your camera, I might say, I could snap that for you or whatever, you know?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Karen, let me come back to you, and I'd like to know, how do you define success on the front lines of this abortion issue from your side of this debate?
Mm. Well, reducing the numbers of abortions. You know, we'd like to see no need for abortion. In the end, ultimately, we want to protect human lives, you know, and even the incremental legislation that we pass saves lives. It may only save a few lives in the beginning. You know, it accumulates into a number of lives. The Hyde Amendment alone that restricts the federal funding of abortion except to save the life of the mother and in cases, reported cases of rape and incest, that law alone is attributed to saving between 1 and 2 million people, and because they didn't have access to the funding.
I want to get Margaret's response of what would success be on your side of the debate?
Well, I mean, we want to increase access to reproductive health care for all people. We want to level the playing field in terms of economic justice, racial and gender justice. So we've got a lot on our to-do list. But frankly, I mean, we would like to, you know, work on proactive policy instead of constantly getting into these, you know, really political fights where it feels like women's health is just so politicized and you know, really treated as a political football by a lot of people. I think it's important to remember that, now this is before my time, but, you know, women did die trying to desperately control their fertility before Roe became law of the land. We want to take down barriers to access. I know Karen and I are hardcore on the opposite side of the Hyde Amendment. We believe that that's have been devastating for working class and poor women.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the Us and Them episode, Abortion Divides, where host Trey Kay speaks with people in West Virginia about the debate over abortion. To hear the entire episode, tune into West Virginia Public Broadcasting tomorrow evening at 8 and again Saturday at 3 p.m. And of course, you can download the Us and Them podcast from iTunes, Stitcher, NPR One, and Radio Public. You can also listen online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the help of Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Carol Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Bob Powell.